What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to Value Town, episode 115. I'm Chan Man V, and joined today with Noxious over here, my co-host. What's up, Noxious?
Not much, man. Just looking at some cards. Been looking at them for like the past 2 weeks, and there just seems to be more and more coming out.
More and more. That's an understatement. There's like five that come out within the hour. It's pretty nuts. But I want to welcome back, man, an old friend. It's been a while since he's been on the show. Owner, fearless leader of Tempo Storm, Raynad. What's up, man?
Not much. It's good to be back. Excited about the new set, new cards. Yeah, looking forward to talking about them today.
Yeah, it's always great. I mean, in the past, we've always had amazing episodes with you and talking about the cards and getting a chance to go back and forth with them. You always have a different perspective on them. That's what I love about it. But we've got tons. Like, I think we've got literally 40 cards if we're gonna actually show today. We're not gonna actually go through them all, okay? We're not gonna go one by one like we've done in the past. We'll just show them, kind of get a general sense of them, and then we'll dive into any ones that we're really passionate about or we think would be good to discuss. But before we get to that, we've got some news to talk about. HCT Winter Finals. Winter Championships happened this past weekend in the Bahamas and ended up concluding with a 4-3 victory by Stan Udachi. So congratulations to him for winning. And that all happened in the Bahamas. I don't know. You guys get a chance to catch any of it at all, like this finals?
I watched a little bit, but just a few of the key matches, you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of regret not going out, honestly.
Yeah, me too, dude.
Yeah. They invited me, but I didn't think it would be that easy to stream from there. You know, they always say it's easy to stream wherever you go, but
that's right. That's
the reality is.
Yeah, yeah.
True fact. Like, we can totally set you up.
Yeah. But, yeah, there's been so much travel. It sucks to have missed it, but it looked like a great event. You know, all the developers are out there, the players. It was, it looked like everyone had a good time.
Yeah, I felt like a lot of the community was out there. It was like a vacation, you know, for folks that weren't necessarily there to work or anything like that. But lots of streams, lots of fun streams. Mike Danae did co-op streams on, I think, five or six people's streams. And that was really cool to get a chance to know him a little better, you know, for folks that haven't met him in person. Noxious, you get a chance to watch any of it?
Yeah, I mean, I caught a bunch of matches like here and there. In no particular order, I ended up watching a bunch of the stuff that came up. Yeah. I'll say something about the overall event, right? Beyond just the tournament itself, it's kind of nice to see how much they invested in promoting, I guess, the expansion in a different way. Like, it wasn't just, oh, here's the Winter Championships. We're bringing people over to Bahamas. It's here's this event that's also acting as a Winter Championship while having to do with the Ungo release, right? It was clearly meant in this period of something big coming in for them, which is the first rotation of Standard. And you could tell that the devs were excited to have us look at some of the new stuff as well.
Yeah, it was the best one. It was definitely the best season, at least season championship that we've had ever in Hearthstone, just because it combined the community with, like, and like you said, with the expansion coming out, it was just good timing. Having in the Bahamas too, by far the best location I think we've ever had, and just the festiveness of it, and it just felt like a good vibe over there. Mixed with the competition, was definitely a great event, and hopefully the coming ones will be just as epic. I don't know where they're gonna pick that would be, you know, I guess better or not exactly tropical like Bahamas, but still have that epicness. It might be hard to come up with a place that's gonna have that much impact. But overall, yeah, I think the games and or just the competitiveness of it was good. The production too. What'd you guys think of the over the shoulder type of cameras and close-ups? Yeah, like, what'd you guys think of that?
Well, I mean, it's no substitute for, you know, in-game spectator client, but it was cool. You know, it's always nice to have good production value on the event. And, you know, I think from a gameplay standpoint, not to be like overly negative, but I think from a gameplay standpoint, it was possibly the least interesting meta to ever be in a featured tournament ever.
Yeah,
everybody played the same decks, and those decks were built with like 28 cards identical to each other. Despite that, the viewership was pretty good. So that means, you know, from a production and a marketing standpoint, it was all really well done. And I think that the timing is really, really good leading up to this upcoming expansion. So you get all that hype from the, you know, the HCT tournament, and then that builds into the daily login rewards, and then that builds into the set release. So
yeah, they synergized or they timed it all really, really well this time, where before you know, something would be just a little off timed. I mean, at times we'd come out with expansions and then we'd have a huge nerf right before a huge tournament. So this all seemed to work out really, really well. And maybe it's a sign for the future. You know, the planning is much better now, I'm hoping. But this is a great way to start off the year for sure. Frozen, yeah, man.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. One of the things that I think is kind of interesting is if you compare it to the Magic like Pro Tours, mm-hmm. which are these, you know, big events that happen four times a year. The Magic Pro Tours happen right before a set's released or like right as a set's released. So there's almost no time to practice with the new cards. And it's kind of an event meant to market the new expansion coming out. Mm, yeah. But in Hearthstone, it's kind of the opposite, right? The competition happens at the tail end of a format right before a set release. And I think it'd be pretty interesting if they, you know, were to shift the championship like a month or something, or like a few weeks. Because imagine if that tournament happened, you know, right after Un'Goro. Mm-hmm. That would be, I think that would be more just like interesting to watch. And I think it would be a better indicator of who's better at the game and who has a better understanding of it.
Deck building, at least. Yeah, I think the creators of decks right now don't really get their time to shine very much, because they do as soon as the expansion comes out. But by the time the first events come out, you know, it's been like, let's say, 2 weeks and a month, and then the decks have been refined. At least like the general drafts of it have come out. And so the edge, the crazy edge that a good deck builder would have within the first, let's say, few days, just gets thrown out the window. And so that window of opportunity for deck building to really be showcased is, I feel, in Hearthstone kind of missed for the competitive side of game of play. Yeah. And I think that penalizes not everyone, because some players are much better pilots than deck builders, but a decent chunk of the people who we don't necessarily see too much on the pro tour or the pro scene rather would maybe make it to the top.
Yeah. I mean, I think the point, I think the biggest argument against that is, you know, is that championship reflective of the entire season then, or an entire winter season, given that, you know, there was 3 months of that meta that was being played. And then, so if you come to the championship, you know, some folks are not good deck builders. Like, we all know that. And so they would be possibly terrible in the finals and playoffs. What do you say to those folks?
Well, I think it's better for the health of the scene when there's continuity in like the names and faces that you see in these mm-hmm. tournaments. If the eight players in the tournaments are different every single time, except for like one guy that's sort of known, that's really like a tough storyline to sell for the mm-hmm. scene. And it's tough to build a fan base around the players. So I think if you keep doing these big flagship tournaments at the tail end of a format, I think you're going to get more variety in names, more new players, which isn't like a bad thing, but it's like, mm-hmm. it's just because the format's so refined that the players at the very leading edge of the meta and the people that are like 3 weeks behind are all playing the same crap. So yeah, the results become kind of random, but yeah, the qualifier process leading up to that. Yeah, it definitely is. I don't know, man.
It's tricky. Yeah. It's like a mix of marketing and with competitive stability too. So
I'll put it that way too. Like the players who are, you know, not deck builders and who wouldn't shine in the system we're talking about. One of the things that usually happens is that pro players in Magic usually just talk to each other, and some of them are better deck builders, better at teching and just refining deck lists. And so what you end up having is a bunch of pilots who work with the deck builders. They all play the same stuff, but it's a playtest group that goes in, and then one of them makes it and the others don't. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of a cooperative effort. So you might have like a different lineup being built by five different playtesting groups that make it to that tournament after Hearthstone's new expansion comes out. So I think it would still create diversity, and you still have like people who are pilots still making it there. Mm-hmm. They would just not be working on the deck building portion as much.
That's a good way of putting it. You know, we definitely hear the shout outs that go out at the end of events, you know, when they give practice partners and all that stuff. But, you know, having a team, not just like your standard brand team, but, you know, just a team of people, you know, players, and have, like you said, the pilot or like the driver, right? Like, you know, racing teams and things like that. That's kind of a cool way to look at it. Okay, well, next bit of news, we got Global Games. The teams were finally announced. We had the whole voting nominations a week or two before that. And then we're finally seeing who the four-man teams are for all the different countries. And it's hard to show all of these things, guys. So, I mean, I'll just kind of give you guys the website, and you guys can go look at it yourself here in chat. But Yeah, Ray, like, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk to you about this event. What do you think about the Global Games, just as an event first, and then we can talk about the teams?
I'm not against it. I think it's a cool thing to showcase Hearthstone, and I think it'll be definitely an interesting event to watch and follow, and I like the whole voting element. There's definitely like a childish side of myself that's like salty for not being in it. I mean, like Forsen was qualified, you know. It's like I actually do play in tournaments a decent amount, and I don't know. It's fine. I mean, North America had a lot of candidates. I think, yeah, overall, it's a cool event. Looking forward to watching it. And I think, yeah, it's a overall positive thing for the scene. I'm glad they did it.
Yeah, I think just this new concept, right, of representing your country has been generally a good idea. I've had some drama that's popped up, you know, in particular around Ponyhof and people before or during the nomination saying that they wouldn't participate if he gets voted in. And sure enough, Ponyhof did indeed get voted in. So I figured it'd be worth talking about what you guys think of, you know, just the drama in general. We never really dove that much into it, Noxious, about, you know, just his past and I guess it continuing on and players' perceptions of it. I don't know. What are your thoughts just on him getting in, players deciding not to participate? I mean, Forsen gave up his spot, by the way. He knows
right,
he
and
gave up his spot.
Show actually ended up getting the spot at the end of the day, which is, you know, pretty good for Show. That's good. That's a good thing. But in the end, like Ponyhof's whole drama thing, from my understanding, from the questions that were asked to Twitch about Ponyhof from different organizations that tried to figure out what was going on, if there was anything going on, it seems like it's legit, right? So the accusations of U-botting are no longer... I mean, they may still be one of the big reasons why people are up in arms against him, but I think another thing came up where there was some shady behavior during a tournament, and now people harped up on that, and it's just a big circle jerk. Worse things have happened, and people did nothing, and now it's just somebody somewhere said something, and frankly, it's all just a big... it's just a witch hunt, like they tend to happen on the internet. So just let it run its course, give it a month, and people will forget.
I mean, I would say, like, just, give it a month, but it's been longer than that.
I don't know.
That,
it's just one of those things where, like, it's the punctual drama that makes it to the top where all the rest gets buried under, even though it's much, much worse.
Yeah, yeah. So. I mean, Ray, you're probably a really good person to talk about this, too, because, you know, like, in the very beginning of Hearthstone, I felt like you were kind of in a position like this where a lot of people didn't like you for, you know, just whatever magic reasons. I don't know. What do you think? What are your take on this? I mean, is this feeling fair to him? Is this just normal community stuff, especially amongst the players? Because I think a lot of players feel very negative and, you know, almost blackballish towards him. Thoughts?
Yeah. I think the Hearthstone community is just so much bigger than the few hundred players that call themselves pros, and it's so much bigger than the Redditors. Mm-hmm. That it's no surprise he got voted in. I mean, I'm Ponyhof neutral. Like, I barely know the guy.
Yeah,
I've talked to him a little bit. I've talked to his wife a little bit. Like, they're nice people, but, you know, we barely talked. At the end of the day, like, I'm not for or against Ponyhof or anything, but I'm very anti-Reddit and anti-Hearthstone semi-pro community. Like, not against the community, rather. I'm, like, against certain mannerisms that they have when it comes to witch hunting people. So, for example, like, how do I put this? Like, it's the way you said it. Like, sometimes there'll be a thread that just gets a lot of traction on Reddit, and then that kind of thread will be associated with that person's brand for a long time. And I made a really heated video about this when it happened with the Masson drama, and Reddit, like, changed its rules. And I said this shit would happen in the future, even if though it's unsubstantiated. And lo and behold, it happened, right? Twitch basically disproved that he was ever viewbotting. He doesn't viewbot, period. Like, they have methods of tracking that. He does not viewbot. He'd never viewbotted. And yet, like, some forum post from, like, several years ago and some Reddit detective has now, like, permanently scarred his reputation because of that Reddit thread. And it doesn't, to Reddit, it doesn't matter that it was disproved, right? The facts say he never viewbotted, but that Reddit thread says he does, and that's what they'll always link. And it's just, like, really gross negligence from the moderator community of Hearthstone to even, like, let those kind of posts fester to begin with. I think it sucks to be in Ponyhof's position where Like, he did nothing wrong when it comes to the view bonding thing, and then he also never it was never proven that he did, and it was actively like disproven that he did, essentially, by anybody that actually asked Twitch. And yeah, at the end of the day, despite all of that, he still gets all this hate out of nowhere because one dipshit who's like salty that he gets viewers wanted to make a Reddit thread full of drama. And this kind of shit happens very often, and I'm going to fire a little bit of shots. This is why I have zero respect for people like Chalky as a human being. For like when they do shit like post Reddit threads. What was the thing he posted about? It was the Magic Amy thing, right? That was him.
Was it Chalky? I don't remember exactly who the person was.
It was the whole Magic Amy thing, right? So you have to ask yourself, like, what does he stand to gain from that other than drama and like, I don't know. Point is, the Magic Amy thing was like actively disproven as far as it could be, right? Blizzard looked into it through IP addresses and everything. We looked into it. There's never any proof of a guy playing for her. But despite that, the drama happens and she's like this meme that everyone laughs about. And, you know, it's like so far, it was so long ago and there were so many details and it's so convoluted that in people's minds, it's like, oh yeah, that's that girl that was like,
I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, like they, even though that's not the reality, it's not the truth at all, and it was disproven. You have this one like little shithead that like puts it in front of the community, and it ruins somebody's career, and nobody stands to gain anything from it, right? It makes me feel embarrassed to be a part of the Hearthstone community when the community just like tears down somebody like that. It's ridiculous that they have there's no amount of proof that needs to happen aside from some imagers that people are too lazy to actually click through and read. And it's like ridiculous that that's all it takes for somebody's reputation. It takes such a big sink. So, and it's something that's like just really prevalent throughout a lot of card game cultures that I think Hearthstone definitely had the opportunity to avoid, and the Reddit moderators decided not to. So at the end of the day, it's like really sucks to be in Pontiac's position where being blacklisted and all that, or whatever. Point is, I get that. But on the other hand, Pontiac's also not a perfect person, right? Mm-hmm. So on the other side of it, the tournament thing was complete and utter bullshit. And
the process,
right? Like that was a super scummy thing to do. But then let's take it to like the Chalky thing, right? Like Matt, like completely unprompted, he dedicates so many fucking hours of his life to searching out the Magic Amy stuff to stir up some drama. And then his own teammate at the time, Nyman, gets like banned for win trading. And he says fucking nothing about it. Like something that was actually proven and acted upon by Blizzard. Like how sick is that? Like people do things that are so scummy. And just depending on whether the Reddit thread gets traction or not, people talk about it like years down the line, you know? Like, I don't know. I get that that's like really strong opinions and ranting about a lot of stuff, but that's just the reality. Like if it happens to catch on Reddit and it gets a couple thousand upvotes, that's it. For years and years and years, people are going to associate. Yeah. It's done. Yeah. And it doesn't matter whether it was proven. It doesn't matter whether there was anything substantial behind it. Just the fact that the Reddit thread blew up in the first place means that his name is forever associated with shitty stuff like that.
And
I think like a lot of the reason the hate comes from the semi-pro community is like, well, this guy gets so many viewers. Why don't I get viewers? I'm a better player than him. Why don't I get attention for being good at a children's card game? I think that's like the underlying subconscious like motive behind a lot of the hatred. Although I completely agree the tournament thing was scummy as hell if it happened the way that it seems like it did. It's also like several years past that. And at this point, all he's doing, and I know because I'm also a streamer, that's what I did for 5 years. Like, all he does now is he wakes up, he puts hours and hours and hours and hours into making content and trying to be positive, and then turns the stream off, spends a few hours with his wife, gets some food, and then wakes up and does it all over again. And that's the day-to-day life. Like, it's not like some Sith Lord behind the scenes doing horrible things. It's like he just had work ethic and a personality that blew up on Twitch. Like, I've never seen somebody be talkative and have a consistent schedule and fail to grow a channel on Twitch. It's like, I made a video where those are the only two variables that matter. And
yeah, I agree with you too, you know, in terms of Pony. It's you know, we had him on the show one time and we got a lot of crap, or not a lot. I wouldn't say a lot of crap, but there were definitely some people, you know, that aren't normally vocal, you know, sent us, you know, some feedback on that. And, you know, for me, I'm like, kind of like you, like, I'm kind of neutral. I'm at this point, it's like, if he did do those things, it does suck that he did them, but it's been a long time now, guys, you know, and his stream is obviously popular. One of the most popular streams, I would say, in Hearthstone, at least top, I don't know, would you say top 8, top 10 or something like that? Yeah. And, it's entertaining. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I think that's, you know, we probably don't need to talk too much more about that. But hopefully this isn't the only news that comes out of the global games, because, you know, I think the event could actually be pretty fun. And I think a lot of the teams are very stacked with a lot of good players and could be a very, very competitive event. Why don't we go jump into the cards and start talking about them? Because I know a lot of people are here basically to listen to that. So I've got these cards grouped in some particular manner. The first one is just a bunch of neutral cards. I figured we'd start with that, and then we'd kind of jump into each of the classes. So I've got a set here that includes, or at least it starts off with Volcanosaur, which is the card that's going to be given to us with the quest, like these login quests that they've introduced, which start today, by the way. If you go log in, get your 50 gold today, and then it kind of progresses up from there. And then I think 6 days later, or on the 4th, you'll be getting a golden Volcanosaur if you log in. But why don't we start with that card, just to get things going. It's a 5/6 beast, 7 mana, adapt twice for Battlecry. Any thoughts on this, given that every single person will probably have this card? Is it powerful? Is it weak? What do you think?
Well, looking through the adapt abilities, I think it's pretty bad overall. Like, you can give it, like, Divine Shield and +1/+1, or, like, Stealth plus, I don't know, Wind Fury, I guess, is pretty cool. You can give it, like, 3 extra health and taunt. I don't know, there's a lot of just
stealth.
Yeah overall I think it's like underpowered, I think, almost no matter what you get out of it.
Okay. Yes, because we could do what we could do a little. Well, you can't, can you get depths twice?
That's it.
Let's just answer this right
now. Stealth, that is the only thing you can do with this, I think.
Wind Fury and Stealth. Okay.
Yeah
so 10 burst or something like that.
Maybe can't be targeted by spells as like a 5/9. Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, now we're talking Sol'Goth territory, yeah. Basically. So there are some fringe cases where it becomes good, but I think the average result is it's just underpowered. I don't think that's something you'll necessarily want. Although I might be surprised. You never know, right? Maybe it turns out to be like this amazing 7 drop just because it's always like a 5/9 with Divine Shield or something, and it just wins games. I don't know. I don't anticipate it's going to see much play. The Paladin 7 drop didn't really work out too much, but this is more of a standalone card you could play on its own. In Arena, that thing is going to be like completely insane, I think. But in Constructed, I don't know if it'll do any waves.
Yeah, one thing I've found, at least with the adapt cards, is when you only have one adapt, you know, the value is like so-so and, you know, very mediocre. But when you start multiplying adapts, getting to 2 adapts and 3 adapts, that's when it's like, wow, okay, you can do some very interesting, versatile things with the card. And, you know, this having 2, I mean, that's the why I kind of wanted to bring it up and see if there was, you know, because it's versatile, it can be maybe a burst finished, you know, or somewhat of a burst finish with a 10 hit, or it could be a value play, right, with the Divine Shields and, you know, maybe even not targetable by spells and that sort of thing. But you see any possibilities in a specific class with this card, given it's a beast, Hunter, maybe? Ray, at all?
Yeah. I don't know. Wind Fury, Stealth, Blessing of Might. I mean, it's one of those things.
Are we still talking about Volcanoes?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Okay, so, we don't have to talk about it.
So Hemet's an interesting card. I mean, okay, it's a shitty rare. It's Miller.
Okay. Let's go on to Hemet. I was just trying to talk about because this is the card that everybody's going to be getting. So
there's
so many
cards to go through. Chris.
All right. Okay. All right. Let's go to Hemet next. Hemet is a 6-mana 6/6 legendary Battlecry. Destroy all cards in your deck that cost 3 or less. What's your thoughts, Ray?
This card's really cool. It seems like a combo enabler of some sort. There's there have been some like really banned cards in Magic that have done similar things where you just pull like 90% of your deck out and stack it.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I mean, it it's like one of those cards that's really tough to evaluate, like so many of these, until you see the whole expansion. And you really have to like go back and think of all these fringe like classic cards like Holy Wrath and Molten Giant and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I think it's cool. I think it's interesting. And I wish they just made more cards like this that just like did something unique. And then the goal was to find a home for it, you know, rather than
mm-hmm. yep.
literally every quest they printed that dictates 28 cards of your deck. So yeah, fun card to deck build around. I'm excited to try it out. And I have no idea how to use it yet.
Yeah, I spent with my stream, I think I spent a good 20 minutes the other night trying to figure out, like, what, you know, is there a way to break this card, you know, or have this card be completely broken? No, I still haven't found just a very obvious one. You know, it's going to be a mixture of, you know, very complex thing, I think, from what I could tell. But Noxious, what do you think?
I'm just bummed out at least Starseeker is rotating out. Because you can right. get a monkey more yeah. reliably, I guess.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
I'll
yeah.
say something about Hemet that I think just on paper is cool. It's just the design of it. I think it's just it's probably my favorite card design-wise of the entire set so far that I've seen. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they're yeah. finally pushing the envelope a bit in terms of what they're willing to give us. Like, they've not every card with creative mechanics has been good so far, but this one is definitely in the on the side of where I'd like Hearthstone designs to come up more often than not. I think this kind of design is just great. For legendaries, where you're just looking at this like, oh, this is not, you play for the stats, sure, it's a decent 6/6, but it does something that's very niche, and it'll fit that one deck maybe during the meta, and when it does, that deck will probably be completely busted.
Yeah, and it's the whole that's concept of see. Thinning your deck, which a lot yeah. of people still have a mental block in terms of how that's good and, you know, that sort of
well,
thing.
It's terrible most of the time when you yeah, do it for like yeah. one card, but
right,
when
right.
you do it for like, you know, 20 cards out of your deck, maybe then we're talking.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. The rest of these cards are all elemental centric, so maybe let's get a general thought on what do you think of elementals this expansion and jump into one of these. Noxious, what do you think? I'll have you start off.
I've actually, like, the more elementals come out, the more I realize how much, like, a lot of them curve into one another, for Shaman, at least, specifically. And it's actually making me reconsider the value of the Pyros card for mages. Like, initially I looked at that card and I wasn't too excited, like, okay, a 2-mana elemental, a 6-mana elemental, a 10-mana elemental, but now I'm like, okay, a 2-mana elemental sets up for, you know, turn 3 elemental synergy, turn 6/1 sets up for turn 7 Blaze Caller. So suddenly you have a consistent, you know, Firelands portal, right? Like, this is basically a Firelands portal with a 6/6 body. So mages can all, like, with water elemental, with their Pyros guy, I feel like they're suddenly getting access to, like, interesting cards. Of course, in Shaman, that's getting, you know, Blaze Caller after Fire Ellie into Kalimos, the Lord of Doom, that deals 6 damage to phase. But there's so much they can do. The issue is, I feel like these cards are not paying much of a price for being good on curve. And now yeah. the big question is, how much can we disrupt an elemental deck's game plan to where they have to skip a beat and say, oh shit, I can't play an elemental now. And now suddenly they're completely falling apart. I think that's what might turn out to happen if, you know, it's too reliant on curving out and you don't let it, you know, catch a breath.
Right. It's dragon-like in a way, but I feel like the weight of the value is in different places when you compare it to like a dragon priest.
Yeah.
Ray, what do you think?
I think, like, overall as a mechanic, it's tough for me to say until I play with it, but it's really simple. Maybe
it's linear.
Hearthstone, I think Hearthstone has the simplest mechanics overall out of any digital card game. I think it's one of the reasons it's successful. These mechanics aren't too complex to explain to the casual player, but to me it lacks a bit of depth. I mean, yeah, you know, in an ideal game, you are just curving out with animals, just like literally every other deck in the game that's not Control Warrior. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's kind of lame. I mean, I don't know. I want the 9 classes to have a different game plan, and I don't think this accomplishes that. I think I'm still playing stuff on curve. On turn 3, I'm still going to play my 3 drop. On turn 4, I'm still going to play my 4 drop. There's a small decision to make sometimes about, like, do you still play your elemental on the off chance that you top deck an enabler for it, or like an elemental payoff card the next turn? Like, sometimes you're going to want to hold one back if it's like a low impact elemental. But mm-hmm. I think most of those decisions also aren't that complex, and it'll be pretty clear cut which play you make with these decks, like, in, you know, 99% of games. So I think I'm a little disappointed that there isn't more decision making behind mm-hmm. this. And I'm sure that there's more decision making than it seems like, because, again, I haven't played with it yet. I'm sure those situations will come up. But yeah, overall, you're just trying to curve out, right? So I want to play a deck that doesn't have that strategy.
Yeah, and for those of you, obviously, that are listening to the podcast, we've shown a few of the elementals. Most of them have battle cries that involve, if you played an elemental last turn, you know, get some value. So Blaze Caller, 7 mana, 6-6, gets 5 damage if you played an elemental before. And Servant of Kalamos, 4-5, 5 mana minion that you get to discover an elemental if you played one before. So very common theme. I feel like battle cries, almost all of them have battle cry, which is interesting in itself, but it is very linear. I don't think it's too crazy. What was interesting about these cards, or at least the most recent one they've announced, is that they're neutral. You know, they're not class specific, like Shaman, you know, or Mage or anything like that. So we may see this in a lot of classes or different classes. Not sure that's a good thing, because if it ends up being good, that it could be terrible.
That's what worries me. Like, I feel like it's one of those things where if too many classes can play elementals, then
yeah.
I mean, ultimately, if the quest decks turn out well, you know, for all the boredom that one might expect out of them, if there are different ways to complete those quests, right? Maybe the discard lock spawns two different types of discard warlocks that complete the quest. Maybe the hunter deck is played with, you know, hyper aggro, play a bunch of one drops, and then the other side is I play mid range and I play that five drop to get me one drops. For the Marsh Queen quest. So there are a lot of ways to complete each quest, I feel, or at least two ways per class. Sure, one of them will come out on top at the end of the day. So I think elementals, I hope elementals will not suppress that at all, assuming that can even rise off the ground with the meta that might be coming around, since we're still keeping a lot of the aggressive decks around. I just wonder if, like, these neutral packages are, with very like linear gameplay, are what I want Hearthstone to be. Like, I feel I've spoken out about it a lot, but I'm really worried that this becomes just another, you know, Dragon Priest all over. Like, I didn't think Dragon Priest was particularly priestly, right? It's a good deck, but it doesn't have the fantasy of being a priest at all. Like, that's just completely lost on me.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. Well, why don't we move on just to kind of round things out, or at least talk about the cards that are showing here. 1 mana, 2/1 Elemental Glacial Shard, Battlecry, freeze an enemy. That's an interesting possibility with that, maybe later in games. Thunder Lizard, Battlecry, if you play an Elemental last turn, adapt. And it's a 3/3 beast with a 3 mana. Okay, well, let's move on. Let's talk about the Rogue cards here. Let me bring it up real quick. Where's Rogue? There it is. Okay, so we had 4 since at least the last time we, at least last week when we did the show, and pretty interesting ones. I was personally pleased with most of these cards that they announced, but you know, we can dive into them in a second. But I kind of want to get your general thoughts on Rogue. Ray, you want to start off?
Yeah, it's a really cool class, and I'm excited to try out with that. Like, this one might actually have a different play style. I'm excited to, you know, run some Shadow Step shenanigans and see how it plays out. And
we've seen you do that a lot on your stream. Some good stuff there.
Yeah, I've played the Panda Rogue deck a lot, actually, and they made it a whole archetype now, so it should be pretty cool to play out. It's really, again, a really tough one to evaluate, right, until you see just all of the possible cards, but I see a lot of potential here, and yeah, we'll just, I really, really hope it's good, because this deck would actually have a different game plan than, you know, curving out.
It's definitely a higher skill cap type of deck, or that you could possibly build. Noxious, general thoughts?
Yeah, that's basically the only quest I'm excited to try. The other ones, I'm like, okay, I'll probably make a deck for them, but this is the only one I'm super hyped about. Like, there are so many ways you can make this happen. The most obvious is, to me, Wisp, Wisp, Vanish. Wisp, Wisp. Like, that's the clearest and easiest one.
Okay.
Or I'm just wondering at this point if they'll release more of those Firefly-like elementals. You know, the little guy that gave you a Flame Ellie. Mm-hmm. 1 mana, 1/2 that gives you a 1/2.
Yeah.
If that's, like, a recurring theme in neutrals, then maybe Rogue will just play those 1/2 generators. I don't want it to be the case, because I think that would be kind of boring, but, you know, that's another line of approach you could have for that deck building. I just love that they're finally making something happen with bounce. You know, I've told you a long time ago that bounce was the one unique thing about Rogue that I wish Blizzard incentivized more. And we got the Ferryman, which was just so weird last expansion.
Yeah, everybody's like, what?
It didn't seem to make any sense. Like, thanks for the 2 mana 2/3 that doesn't fit anywhere at all, and it's just the worst brewmaster for its purposes.
Right.
But now that we see this, you know, maybe there's a point of redundancy where you jam enough of the same thing in. that suddenly you can go, you know, Firefly, and then you play one drop, bounce it back, replay, and then next turn you do that with your other Firefly. I don't know. There's like, there's a way in which this is super fun and viable, and I hope it is.
Yeah, and the quest we're talking about, guys, is obviously one mana. EverQuest is one mana. Legendary, the Cavern Below quest, play four minions with the same name. So it doesn't actually say bounce, but it just says play four with the same name. And then reward is a Crystal Core, which is a five mana spell, legendary, for the rest of the game. Your minions are 5/5, which is crazy interesting, because no matter what you throw down or what's summoned by a Death Rattle or anything like that, it's a 5/5. So that completely changes dynamics of even some removal cards, some transformation cards. You know, it's not the same effect as it used to be. So very, very interesting there. What do you think is going to be the best way, or first thoughts on best way to achieve it? Obviously, Noxious said Wisps with Vanish. Ray, what do you think? Just purely Shadowcaster and Shadow Steps, or anything kind of new or innovative you might have thought of right off the bat?
With the mechanic in general?
Yeah, just trying to finish the quest, you know?
And I think there's going to be one thing that, like Noxious's Wisp, Vanish idea, I think there's eventually going to be one way that's just the most efficient to do it, and that's what everyone's going to end up using. I don't think it's as simple as, like, hey, there's this one specific combination of three cards that's going to trigger the quest. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be more like, I just play a bunch of value Battlecry dudes, like Swashburglar, and then, like, the Ferryman, and Panda, and Shadowstep, and maybe the C'Thun package would be really good in this, I think. And then you just kind of try to incidentally do it throughout the game at some point, and your quest is just kind of like a
bonus
incidental way to win.
I kind of agree with that. And the reason I was bringing that up, and just the fact that you had the kind of combo, is we talked a little bit about this when it came to the Warlock quest, where, you know, maybe Deathwing is the only thing you play, right? And it just finishes it out for you. But I think you're right too. I think it might be more incidental. And for a while I was just kind of, I was a little upset because I'm like, bouncing? I mean, bouncing is so bad for tempo. Like, can you imagine playing against elemental decks and things like that as rogue and having to deal with that? But then they came out with Vile Spine Slayer, which I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, this starts making a little bit more sense with bouncing, you know, like with Shadow Step. And, you know, and the Vile Spine Slayer, by the way, is a 5-mana, 3/4 minion that's combo, destroy a minion. So this is a way to, you know, at least contain the board a bit, so you're not just getting smashed by big jade minions or elementals by bouncing. So I love that card. I felt like this card synergized or glued, put a lot of glue on a lot of pieces that didn't seem to synergize, you know, for me at least.
Right, and rogue. Mm-hmm. There's so many cards you want to play. You're like, I can't play Shadow Step. I mean, I'd love to, but I can't get there and survive while bouncing, you know, meaningless kidnappers. Like, that's not going to save me. But this actually helps out.
Yeah, for sure. Mimic Pod, last one. 3-mana spell, rare, draw a card, then add a copy of it to your hand. Basically a 3-mana Thistle Tea type of card. Oh, you're muted, bud.
Thinking they're just going to jam us a quest with stealth, like based on what we'd seen up until this point. I was thinking this is what we get, but this just came up as a complete surprise to me, and I'm just really hyped about brewing with this.
Oh,
at least for Rogue.
Ray, you like Mimic Pod at all? Or?
Mimic Pod's a interesting one. It's like Arcane Intellect, on power level, but it's tough to say whether Rogue wants an effect like that, right? Rogue's a deck that for longest time has gotten its value either through like individual minions getting like 2-for-1s, like, I don't know, Swashburglar, Tomb Pillager, Hazard Drake. Or it's gotten it like all at once off of Gadgets and Auctioneer. So we haven't really had a rogue list that just wants to pay 3 mana to go up a card. And whether Mimic Pod's good enough, it's tough to say. It's whether this entire archetype is strong enough, I think we'll kind of decide that. If you Mimic Pod something really expensive, you're going to be pretty unhappy. You don't want to draw, you know, 2 copies of Gadgets in or 2 Azure Drakes, even in a lot of cases, just too slow. Oh, not Azure Drake anymore, but, you know, some 4-drop or whatever. So you're going to want to kind of hit cheap things so you can kind of unload your hand right away. There's definitely an element of randomness, but every card draw effect has a bit of that. I think Arcane Intellect is probably better in the sense that it gets you towards specific cards better. It gets you twice as deep into your deck if you're looking for a specific piece. But then Mimic Pod is like, has a chance of high rolling. Because if you hit, If you hit something you're just not supposed to have two of, it's just so gross.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's overall, I'd say this is like the toughest class to evaluate till we see all the cards. But because it does not curve out with efficient dudes, if I had to put my money on it, I would say it's bad, but I really hope it's good.
Yeah, I agree with you too. And some people are thinking, oh, Mimic Pod, it's going to help you achieve the quest too. The only thing I'd say to that is you have to get minions for that to actually help you. You know, and rogues run a lot of spells, well, generally.
Yeah, I'll make a prediction here. It's a very bold prediction because there's only, you know, six cards left with one epic to be revealed for Rogue. Mm-hmm. I predict a card that lets you target a minion on the board and put a copy of it on top of your deck. That's what I'm predicting. I want to see this OP and Mimic Pod get some love.
That would make sense. That would make a lot of sense, actually.
I don't think it's going
to
happen.
All right, Noxious with a prediction. We'll have to talk about next week because I think all the cards will be out by next week. Okay, let's move on to warrior cards. We actually had a warrior card come out today, so I had to add that last minute, literally 45 minutes before the show. So I barely even got a chance to think about it, but we haven't seen many warrior cards up to this point. I think before these three, we've had one, Discover and Goro. I believe that was the only one that we've seen up until that.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was the only one. So we still got a lot of warrior cards to take a look at, but let's talk about this. Let's start with Molten Blade. It's a weapon, one mana, one weapon. Each turn, this is in your hand, transforming into a new weapon. So like Shifting Xeris weapon style. thoughts, Noxious?
I mean, I think this is going to be more valuable in longer games, probably, where you can pick your time. If you have enough time to float the mana to play any weapon you get, and you can pick yourself up like a Reaper that you wouldn't otherwise play in your deck because sometimes you want something else, sure. The big question is, like, is there ever a point where you play this as a 1-1 for one? Probably in some matchups. The guy goes small-time Buccaneer, brings out patches, you have this, sure. Does that even work? Or does it start later? Like, you'd have to top deck it as a 1-0. I don't think this card's particularly fantastic. I mean, it's like Shifter's Errors. Meh.
Okay. Ray, what do you think?
About Molten Blade?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool one. It's like, so at first when I saw it, I'm like, wow, this card's actually good enough that you'd play it, right? Because
that's kind of
you think about
too.
Those situations when you hit True Silver or you hit another War Axe and it seems really good. But then I thought about it more and I asked myself, is it better than King's Defender on average? And I think the answer is no. Like a lot of the weapons you're getting are 3-mana 3/2s as far as the playable ones and like the really bad ones that you're just not going to play, you're still going to hit sometimes. And the real, I think, deal breaker for this card is that it needs to be in your hand for several turns to get a good hit. So, like, yes, if it's in your opening hand every time, I think it is a good card. But when you think about playing a normal game of Hearthstone, if you top deck it on turn 5 or turn 8, you know, and your first flip is a Light's Justice or your first flip is, like, Gladiator's Longbow and you have 6 mana, that's really rough. You have a dead card for a couple turns, and there's a definite cost to that. So overall, I think I would be surprised if it's good enough to make it into decks, but it's not like completely out of the realm of possibility, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this too, in a similar fashion. I derived that the value would be a little bit better than Defender, though, given that some of the bad, like Curse's Blade, I think is out, you know, and some of the, maybe just one or two of the weapons are gone that would be a little bit worse. And the only thing I could come up with is it would just be in a very aggressive deck like the Pirate Warrior and, you know, not so much in a control deck. Like, what do you guys think about that? Because in a Pirate Warrior, you just, you know, just hit phase and you want weapons that just do damage for multiple turns, right? Does this have any control potential?
I feel like you've already got good control weapons in the class, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you need more? Like, you could play an extra upgrade in your deck if you want to make that existing weapon better.
Right, right.
That's not a Gore Howl. I feel like it doesn't really help unless you want a bait removal away from your weapon so an ooze takes it and then you have something else. But at that point, I don't know if that just double up on a good weapon you're looking for. I guess we'll have to do like the averages on this, right? Like once all the weapons are revealed, if there are any new ones, maybe this is fine. You know, maybe this is a perfectly fine weapon and it turns out that the average is a 4/2 and that it does something else on top. Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe you can play that, but
Okay.
Otherwise, I feel like it's because it also changes. By the way, like the cost changes, right? We've mentioned that, but
yep.
I think it needs to be clear that you're paying the full mana cost for that card. It's not going to be reduced in cost to one.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that would be broken.
It actually does transform into the right. other card. Yeah. Okay. Well, it doesn't seem broken, so I guess we can move on. King Mosh was the other warrior card that was announced maybe a couple days ago. It's a legendary card, 9 mana, 9/7 beast, destroy all damaged minions. And they've been hinting at possible warrior cards to help with Jade Druid, given that Jade Druid has been a control warrior killer in a lot of instances. But is this the card you think that they're talking about, or you think they're probably alluding to some future cards, Ray?
Sorry, for Cornered Sentry, you mean?
No, King Mosh. We're gonna kind of jumping over to King Mosh. We'll come back to Cornered Sentry.
Yeah, for King Mosh, it's that's a tough one, right? It's like, will control decks be a thing in a world of Jade Druid? That's the question. Yeah. I think it's hard to say yes to that, but because it's not just Jade Druid, then it's like N'Zoth Priest that can just tech a couple, a couple more late game things and just have really favored matchup. I think that Brawl is just such a powerful card. We're still gonna have Fool's Bane for a while. Together with Violet Illusionist.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All these things combined, I think, make you not really need another AoE effect like that. I think King Mosh, actually, that's a bad example, not even Fool's Bane. Sleep with the Fishes is a way better example than this. Sleep with the Fishes kills, it's a 4 damage AoE with a Whirlwind, right?
Mm-hmm.
For 3 mana. And you compare that to King Mosh, it's just, it's really tough for me to justify putting this thing in a deck, right? It's close. Like, I think if it was 8 mana and we had like another, or if it was, let's say if it was smaller and it cost like 7 mana, I think we'd be talking. But yeah, as is, probably not quite good enough, I'd say.
Yeah, I think so too. I feel like Warrior doesn't have a very clear finishing move right now. I mean, we have Grom, still there, and people even now have figured out what they've had to do the Alexstrasza and Grom combo with a weapon equipped to finish even Jade decks. But I think until that's clearer, it's going to be still rough life for Warriors to continue playing this kind of removal game. But King Mosh for sure helps against Jade decks, right? I mean, or Jade boards.
I mean,
that are
what's one
very
turn
impressive
when you're gonna get buried under 17/17s? Like, it's cool to, it's like Twisting Nethering, a board full of 9/9s and 8/8s. The next turn he goes Gaddisan, Jade Idol, and you're just looking at this like, oh, what have
it's
I done?
9/7 though. I mean, this isn't like a 3/3 that just destroys
the
board.
When have you hit their phase during the game to where that's gonna win you the game?
Right.
I think this card supports. Like, we've looked so far, like, all the legendaries that seem to be released have something to do with the quest to some extent, right? Like, they try to make it so you want to play, like, buff decks with the 6-mana 3/7 to buff your little 1/1, so you want to have bodies on the board. The Clutch Mother with the discard quest. So I'm feeling like the Warrior quest is going to deal damage to enemy minions every turn once you complete it. You play a bunch of taunt minions, trigger it, and then you just deal damage every turn. And in that case, King Mosh is automatically enabled on 9. I could see that, but if you have to help, like, hold Whirlwind and not use Sleep with the Fishes for this, which is the biggest argument against it, I don't know, man. I'm not feeling like this is a particularly good destruction effect.
Okay. All right. We're going to have to, I'm sure people are going to play it right off the bat. So I think we'll find out very, very quickly how good King Mosh is. All right. So the last one is a card that just came out literally like an hour ago. It's called Corner Sentry, 2 mana, rare, 2/6. Sounds familiar. Taunt. Sound familiar. Battlecry, summon 3/1/1 raptors for your opponent. So essentially dirty rat warrior style, instead of pulling out a random card, you pull out 3 raptors. All right, so let's talk about this. I don't think this is better than Dirty Rat. I mean, of course, just Dirty Rat has these amazing timings you can use. But is this worth the penalty that you're going to be taking by getting this early taunt, Ray?
I think it is. I mean, in a lot of cases, it really depends on like what Whirlwind effect we have, right? It's if we get another like Death Bite where I can just bank like a 0 mana Whirlwind, then yeah, this card's nuts. But if not, it definitely it's a little bit underpowered. It really depends on what the supporting cast is going to be for it. I think, like, for something like Wild, it's an interesting card, right? Because you can play it with Unstable Ghoul, or, well, if yeah, you have unstable ghoul in play, you play this, you immediately trade ghoul into something. And I don't know, or like Deathbite. It has so many synergies, and it's like one of those cards that's tough to evaluate until you see all the cards out there. But I think even though the stats are the same as Dirty Rat, it's a very different card with a very different role. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the biggest synergy with this card that you got to think about is Brawl. Like just like the Dirty Rat, it's that's a huge synergy. So yeah, I think in Control Warrior, which I'm already playing two Dirty Rats in, I would start with one of these, you know, maybe move it up to two just to test it out. But you know, this might belong in a deck we haven't even seen yet.
Yeah. Would you replace Dirty Rat or would you play it like okay, so you'd add this in.
Wow, well, this is like an anti-aggro card, right? Whereas right. Dirty Rat is an anti-control card. So yeah. they have different roles, even though the stat line is the same. I'm not playing Dirty Rat because it's a 2-6 taunt.
Yeah.
I'm playing it because of the battle cry. And this I'm playing because it's a 2-6 taunt.
Got it. That's a good point. You're Noxious.
Yeah, I think the Warrior Quest is going to be taunt related. So this is probably going to be jammed in. But if it isn't taunt related, this card's still fine. Just in general, the only thing missing is Deathbite. Like, I don't know if I want that card back in the meta. But just like that's the kind of push you almost need to make this card like an auto include where you just look at this like, yeah, this is a decent, you know, turn five play. It does something on that turn. Whereas now it's one of those things where you have to wait for the rest of the meta to shape up to give you a clear picture of where this goes. I guess you could play the... Do we still have the 1-mana 1/1 that deals 1 damage, Tentacle of Nazoth? Just meme yeah, that on right. turn 1 and jam this in. Yeah, it's a cute combo.
And some of the synergy that's kind of cool with this isn't just Whirlwind related, but like right. imagine you just have an Acolyte of Pain sitting in play. You just play this, trade in. Like,
that's true.
There's a lot of ways to immediately trigger Enrage. I mean, it's a cool card. I used to... It reminds me of... When I played Patron, I would play Leroy in the deck so I could give them Walps and then trade in.
You're right.
This is kind of
similar. Play around it, yeah. And you could give them the Walps and force the triggers.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I didn't really see a lot of the synergies you guys mentioned. That's going to be a lot of fun to try out. Okay, well, let's move on to the Shaman cards here, and let me bring it up. And I guess to lead off the discussion, guys, for Shaman, given that, Ray, you weren't here the previous week, and we talked a little bit about the ones released last week. Team Murloc or Team Elemental for Shaman?
Seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, Elemental a million times
okay.
over.
Okay. It
just 10 unplayable cards. You have to play 10 cards that shouldn't be in your deck in the first place.
The quest
place.
Is ridiculous.
To get a minion that, like... is barely above compare it to Fel Reaver. Like Jesus right, it's Christ.
That was my so reaction.
Yeah. The Primal Lord's insane, but yeah, Megafin sucks, I think. I think like even this one I can confidently say before I even see the rest of the expansion. Unless they like make 20 Murlocs that are all mistakes, this card's bad.
10 is crazy. I can't believe they chose 10. That is
compare it to the Hunter quest and then throw up.
But I mean, it goes fast. I think like there's a world in which we play an elemental deck with just two Calling the Finishers and Finja, and then we jam this
sure.
in. You don't play a Murloc deck. You just play this because it's a card, and then you somehow complete the quest because you're a control shaman. So I think there's like, it's not a build around as much because Calling the Finishers just takes care of four Murlocs in one card, which I think on its own is, I mean, it's four 1/1s. Granted, what's that doing there? But.
But even for control shaman, that's not a very, it's not typically an efficient way to try to end games, you know, like just get a bunch of whatever value. I mean,
Spirit
like
Echo.
Yeah, just there's a bunch
Echo
of Murlocs.
Mega
in Finn,
and you just, you know, you go to town, and you get another wave of 10 Murlocs. I don't know, man. I like the concept of mixing elementals and Murlocs. Like, that's one thing I want to try to see if this quest can be done the same way people play Finja now as. I don't really want to play this crappy archetype. I don't want to bring out garbage Murlocs, but I'm down for some War Leaders and Bluegills, and I'll take the Finishers on top. So
yeah,
maybe
Finch is something that people have been considering for a while. And for the quest, by the way, guys, Unite the Murlocs. It's quest summon 10 Murlocs, reward Megafin, and Megafin is a 5-mana 8/8 Murloc. It's fill your hand with random Murlocs. So it's got that Nephthalon feel to it, but it fills your entire hand instead of just giving you... I think that's what Nephthalon give you four, right? Nephthalon was never good, like at least when I played it. I you know, just never, bad. There's just not good enough Murlocs, you know, it's just for you to get something good.
I think BGH was the issue, but yeah.
Yeah, that's true. BGH is bad. One thing, one of the big knocks, though, I have to say, like, when thinking about the Murloc was just, okay, how do I even draw cards? Like, I'm going to, even if I try to achieve this thing before calling the finishers, you know, I'm just going to be blowing through my Murloc cards. So at least Spirit of the Echo came out, which is a 3-mana spell, give your minions death rattle, return to your hand. So you'll be able to at least reload a little bit mid game, and then, you know, hopefully get Megafin and somehow finish the game with a bunch of Murlocs at the end. But overall, I guess the consensus is it's still weak. Maybe
I don't know, man. It could be a bomb. Like, I don't know. I feel like Unite the Murlocs is going to be super polarized in terms of effect. Yeah. Like, it might turn out to be a complete insane card that doesn't require to build around. In that case, I think that's fine. But if you have to build a deck filled with 2-mana 2/1s that summon 1/1s in a world of Maelstrom Portals, you're in for some deep awakening issues. You're not going to like that. It's just not
okay.
Yeah, I agree with Noxious, though. If it does see play, it'll be like in a light package. It's not going to be an all-in Murloc deck trying to curve out with Murlocs. I think you know, it will be like a call on the finishers and like Finja type of plan.
I wish Anyfin is awesome still existed. That might have... I might have been interesting because I always played the Shaman Murloc pack or deck whenever I was finishing my Murloc quest every time I get it, and that always surprised me just how effective calling finishers with Anyfin It's Awesome was in combo with like a Bloodlust just to finish games that you had no business in winning. So I wish that card still existed because it might have given a little bit more viability to this. Wild's got too many good stuff for you to try this, I think. So we'll see if we have a place for this. One thing I am happy about, though, is that the quest didn't have to do with elementals, because if that was the case, it would just been no question. Everybody's playing elemental. There's, you know, a shot, and it's probably going to be super good. Like, I think it would almost guarantee that would be good if the quest had synergy too.
Yeah, plus we also have the 3-mana 3/2 Murloc that discovers a Murloc, right? Like, if you have one, so maybe you can like get extra Murlocs without playing them. Maybe I don't know.
That's okay,
questionable, but
all right, let's talk about the good card, which is the good legendary that they got. Calamus, Primal Lord, 8-mana 7/7 elemental battlecry. If you played an elemental last turn, cast an elemental invocation. And there's 4 invocations, one representing each of the elements, you know, water, air, earth, and fire. The water ones restore 12 health. The air one is 3 damage to all enemy minions. Earth is fill your board with 1/1 elementals. And then fire is deal 6 damage to your enemy hero. So a little bit of mechanics from a lot of powerful cards we have in the game, or even spells we have in the game, all in one big awesome legendary minion. So, Ray, what do you think?
I think this card's busted. I mean,
yeah,
it's a lot of people will kind of value these cards based on how good one of the options is on average. But the truth is, when you have an option, you have like 4 different options that adds a lot of value. You know, this card isn't just as strong as like an 8-mana 7/7 that gains 12 or an 8-mana 7/7 that deals 3 damage to enemy minions. It's like the choice adds so much power to it where it makes it just a powerful play in like every single matchup. And yeah, I mean, this card's just absolutely incredible.
Noxious?
Yeah, I was, you know, I was thinking how often do you have an elemental, but it seems like there's enough of them that you can either play as a curvestone thing or hold on to justify this. And if anything, this is probably one of the few cards for which you're looking at and thinking, okay, I'm going to hold on to my elemental to play it for this. Like, I've seen a lot of cards and I'm just not too keen on, you know, holding off on curve play and Hearthstone to play because they do something crazy. But this guy, I'm like, yeah, I'll keep my 5-drop, you know, for turn 7 and try to make it there with totems if I have to. Because this might just turn the game around in your favor, which I love. Look, I'm happy there's a powerful effect like this that will make me question whether or not I should play on curve. But, I mean, at the same time, it might turn out to just be the the card that they either have or they don't. And if they do, you lost. And if they don't, well, you're in a good spot. And I don't, it's kind of like one of those super big swing cards. And the arguments against those, you know, kind of comes back to that one as well. But I like it. I really like the design of it.
Yeah, it's hard not to like this card. This card is crazy versatile. It'll get you out of many, many situations. And then the fill the board one can set you up for some kind of finish if you let's say you run Bloodlust or anything like that.
Yeah.
So the worst one is the Fireball, right, to the face. I mean, I think that's clear, right?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of upset that one's an option because it's like a, I don't know, it's like this extra burst damage you have to constantly play around. Like in a,
without that option,
imagine a scenario where like Kalmos is your only big play and you want to keep board initiative and you're like forced to play him, but you have to like do the Onyxia option against a, I don't know, against a control deck that could deal with it with a Brawl or something. It's like now they can just randomly burn you out. I mean, it doesn't take many hits in the face from Fire Elemental to put you in range. Mm-hmm. Six burst does a good amount. So, yeah, I mean,
that's a good point.
It's definitely the worst on average, I'd say. But, like, the fact that it's an option is it effectively makes your opponent's life total 24 for the entire game, which is a big deal.
Mm, that's true.
Because imagine if that was, like, the only effect you could do. It would be just a pretty bad card that you'd never put in your deck. But just like the fact that in your list, you have a Leroy without having to actually play a Leroy. It changes the way the game plays out more than it looks like.
Is this, just for comparative reasons, is this better than Rag for, you know, some of these?
I think so.
Okay. All right. That's pretty interesting.
I wish they'd make more good, like control finishers like this. I think I like Kalmos. I like Ragnaros, the Light Lord. I'd like to see more cards like that. You know, like Tyrion, I think, is kind of the wrong way to go because like aggro and mid-range decks can play it pretty comfortably. But like a big expensive dude that only a control deck would want to run, I think, is pretty cool. And it'd be nice to see more expensive dudes like that.
Yeah, agreed. All right, well, we're about halfway through with these cards, but let's take a real quick break. And when I say break, we're not going anywhere. We're actually going to give a shout out to some of the folks, some of our patrons that support the show, as well as folks on iTunes. For those of you that don't know, the Value Town is 100% supported by the Patreon, which you can go to patreon.com/valuetown and contribute there if you enjoy the show and want to support us, keep us doing the show and allowing us to do some really, really special things with it. I want to give a shout out to some of those folks right now, to our big legendary producers, Mike T and Richard S, of course, to start off, as well as some others that have been contributing for a long time. Devin W, Anthony L, David T, Louise L, Vince F, Tony R, a P. Floyd Guy 84, and Evie. Also the folks on iTunes that have been leaving us 5-star reviews and some great comments and things. That's been helping out a lot, guys. We've been getting more and more each week. So it's, you know, we're kind of inching up a little bit. I mean, we're still in that two slot, like solidly, but it's just like, you know, more and more that we get, it definitely helps out. I want to give a shout out to So Abnoxious as well as Season Pie and US Ski Team for the latest 5-star reviews. Thank you so much. And if you guys do listen to the show on your iPads or in the car or on your Android devices, just go and leave us a review. It's very, very simple. It takes like a minute, maybe even less, to do it. And again, it's a good way to help us out. But in terms of the Patreon, we have this milestone that we've still made. And we've got Ray on to do this for the first time. So Smilestone, it's time for Smilestone. And what that is, guys, it's our time to you know show that we're happy about the game, or at least we have some maybe fake happiness for the game.
Fake it till you make it, they say, right?
Yeah, fake it till you make it, exactly. And this is where we show that by smiling for 20 seconds. So here we go, starting now. Okay, that was, oh my gosh, I think that was the longest 20 seconds I don't know, it felt like the longest 20 seconds we've ever had.
You counted really slowly, man. I don't know what you did.
I can't hear you, Ray. Can't hear you.
I said that physically hurt.
Yeah, I know, right? It just starts jamming.
I used muscles I didn't even know I had.
Oh, man. That's exactly why we knew it would be epic this week. But thanks again, guys, to all the patrons making that happen. And, you know, without you guys, we wouldn't be here. So thanks so much. Okay, let's continue on, guys, with some more cards. We've got Warlock. that's coming up here. Let me bring them up. And I feel like they came really hard out the gate with with Warlock. But, you know, we've got a couple more that they announced. Starting off with Corrupting Mist. It's a 2-mana spell, rare. Corrupt every minion, destroy them at the start of your turn. So my initial reactions when I looked at this, I was like, okay, how's this, you know, similar to Doomsayer? For some reason, that was like the analogy that I first went to. And then the more and more I thought about it, I was like, you know, this is nothing like Doomsayer. This is much worse than Doomsayer, at least for me. So do you guys think this is good? Do you see it being played, Noxious?
It's hard to say. I mean, it might be one of these cards that that ends up being good by virtue of other defensive tools being playable, so they can protect themselves behind like a wall of sorts and they jam this. Mm-hmm. The issue with it is that it lets your opponent, like, the point of Doomsayer is to get the initiative back when the guy just chooses to pass on it. Worst case scenario, it heals you. So this lets you take another wave of damage from whatever is there and then develop on top of it. So yes, yeah, they lose whatever board. Like, imagine Zoo has this, right? They go like, they have like 5-1 drops, you jam Corrupting Mist, you take, you know, 12 damage, and then they play a Doomguard, and that Doomguard isn't affected by Corrupting Mist. And that's what makes it, you know, more difficult to justify playing. But yeah, maybe it's good enough. Maybe someone will find a sick shell for it. Maybe the game will be slow enough that it's good. But
one thing to mention too is it's corrupt every minion. It's not just corrupt enemy minions too.
Right. It includes yours as well. So yeah, you could technically use it as a forceful way to trigger death rattles the opponent doesn't want to trigger.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ray?
Well, if you have minions...
this is going to be good.
If you have minions in play, think about a 2-mana spell that gave all your minions taunt.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This
I see what you mean.
Strictly worse than that, because they can also kill you if that's a better play for them.
Right, that's true.
And a 2-mana spell that would give your minions taunt is super terrible, so you'd never play that. So in the scenario where you have minions, card is unplayable. So that means that you only have to consider the options when you don't have minions and they do have minions. So they have stuff, you don't have stuff. Probably means you're dead in a turn because Hearthstone. And you play Corrupting Mist. They put you down to like 5 life, and then they play another dude that's unaffected by this. And you're still in the same position you were before, where they have stuff and you don't have stuff, except now you're dead. So I think this is just unplayable in every scenario, and I can't think of a situation where it would be good, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I give them a little credit for... It's a different way of approaching removing boards and removing minions from the game, you know, given that there's an extra turn in there. And like you said, it's like turning your minions into taunts and things like that.
Actually, it doesn't give them pseudo-taunt. Yeah, like you guys said, it corrupts your own guys, right?
Oh, so yeah, that's true. It dies anyways, yeah. So that's true. He just hits face.
This is awful.
It is pretty bad, dude.
I think the reason they had was people were playing Corruption and Reno Lock, right? And the card did okay, but the thing with Corruption is that usually as Reno Lock, you're using it when there's one minion on the board, so yeah, it acts as like a Siphon Soul with a delayed turn. The issue is Corrupting Mist is saying... All right, man, you're in that spot. The guy has 5 things that you want to corrupt individually. Like, I would never cast a mass corruption if you gave it to me in that spot, because I'm dead on the following turn. I need an AoE. Yeah. And this doesn't act, unfortunately, like, it doesn't serve the same purpose as corruption. It might work on, say, 2 minions, right? Like, there's a type of thing where they go, like, turn 1 or turn 2, they have, like, two dudes. Very early in the game, you jam this, and that gets you, like, into turn 3 and 4. But, like, as a mid-game to late-game removal, I think this falls a bit short. But it does give you back... It almost guarantees you get to turn 3. Like, you play Quest turn 1, Surrender Tempo. Turn 2, they play, like, a second minion, Corrupting Mist. Then turn 3, you jam at 3-drop. You know, you can start your curve a bit later because this helps you get there, but it's not going to be, like, a good mid-game to late-game push, I don't think.
It's not tempo changing at all. That's the biggest thing, I think, for me.
But it's also helpful that if you think about, like, you know, using Corrupting Mist first into developing minions on the back of it, like, that works. You can find maybe a spot where that's a thing, but I think it's going to be kind of niche in application. We'll see. We'll see what can come of it. But I think it's going to be in conjunction with the quest, if anything.
I hope at least the animation is cool for it. You know, like, mist would be pretty nice.
No,
come on. It'd be kind of a cool, you know, this mist that kind of sneaks onto the board from the sides or something and then fits it. That's like the only thing. I mean, the bar works kind of neat, right? All right, so let's move on to the next one. It's 4-mana, 4/4 beast, Ravenous Pterodax. Battlecry, destroy a friendly minion, adapt twice, and this is a common card. Yeah, what do you guys think? Noxious?
Well, adapt twice is good on a, you know, just on about anything. The issue is, like, it's okay. We saw a 7-drop earlier that was unfortunately not statted very competitively baseline, but this is okay. And if you can make it a 4-mana 6-6, it's all right. If you can make it a like a 5-5 with Divine Shield, it's pretty good. If you can make it a 4-7 with Taunt, it's pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with it that make it viable. My issue is, what are you destroying? Imgang boss is rotating out. You don't have fodder coming up on turn 3 based on my understanding of the current curve stone. So you'd have to play this in, like, it would be like a more situational play than just sacrificial stuff. Maybe you can play Abusive Sergeant in your deck, get rid of the fodder and make this guy better, because you are converting 1/1s into much higher power overall. So I think that's when that card is good, when you're playing a bunch of fodder buffs or leftovers. So I like that. I like the card.
Ray?
I think this is the only 4-drop they've ever made besides Defender and possibly Gormok that is actually good enough for Zoo. I think it's pretty strong, and it depends on if the supporting staff's there. Like, for Wild, I would definitely play 2 of this card. I think it's nuts. But for... actually, maybe not, because Woodwalker's better, and you might want Argus for Taunt. But point is, it's good. It's just a matter of, like, what are the earlier curve minions, and is there, like, an Ruby and Egg type thing that you can eat?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing.
I think, without seeing the rest of the cards, as of right now, it's a little bit underpowered, because right now all we have is Possessed Villager and Forbidden Ritual and some other, I mean, whatever you get off Dark Peddler, you can eat. But it's also, like, I don't know, it's such a good payoff if there's anything that you can consistently trigger it with. Like, if there's one more Impgang boss type thing, this card becomes pretty interesting at that point. You know, I mean, maybe even just play like Harvest Golem again or something like that. I think this card's solid for Zoo. Outside of Zoo, I wouldn't consider it in anything. Also, Curator draws it, which might actually matter now that you have this and Clutch Mother.
That's one thing to mention generally, I think, across the board for all the classes, is that a lot of these new cards are beasts. So Curator, I think, becomes an option, at least. It's a little expensive still, but at least it's an option to draw cards for every single class.
Yeah,
this has a Void Terror feel to it. You know, it's really hard. Yeah, it, like you said, it just depends on what you're playing alongside of it.
Runic Egg. Let's bring it back.
Yeah, I mean, Runic Egg, okay.
They're never going to pop it, so might as well just capitalize on it.
That's true.
Big dude.
It might be. Yeah, it might be the best way to pop that card. Dude, that card is...
Let's go. You can play Corrupting Mist on your Runic Egg or pop it with Ravenous Paradox.
That's terrible. All right.
There you go, man. All Give some draw to Warlocks.
Honestly, yeah. I think this might be why they took Power Overwhelming out of this set.
Yeah.
You can Stealth Wind Fury this and just wreck them.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
that would be so disgusting. Oh, man.
Okay, let's see. We've got Paladin cards next. All right, the Paladin Quest came out recently, even though the reward was leaked a long time ago, but let me bring it up here. All right. I think the best thing to do is just to start with the quest. And the quest is the last, was it Kaleidosaur? Quest casts 6 spells on your minions, reward Galvadon. Galvadon's a 5-mana, 5/5 beast, battlecry, adapt 5 times. Okay, so let's talk about this, because this is, I think, was a huge topic when it first came out. And I think most people's reaction was, I mean, cast 6 spells on my minions? Paladins have questionable buff spells right now. So I think people are thinking that they're going to come out with better buffs, or there's something that I think majority of people are missing. So Raynad, what's your thought on this?
I mean, Galvadon, first of all, just kills them, right? When you adapt 5 times, you just...
yeah.
Well, unless they have, like, Devolve or some type of...
Devolve, that's right.
But I mean, like, yeah, the point is you Stealth Wind Fury and they die. Like,
it's a finishing move, yes. Right? It's definitely a finishing move.
So it's not a value guy. It's like the percentage that it kills them is pretty high, like probably over 75. So when the payoff is like 5 mana win the game, you really have to consider how hard is the quest actually to trigger. And in this case, I think not that hard. I've been building Pants decks on stream for a very long time, and they're fine. Yeah, they're really not that bad. And the fact that you have that game plan, but then all of a sudden, like, a card that actually just wins the game is pretty absurd to me. Like, the thing about Galvadon is it's so busted because stealth is a mistake and this card gets it. So like the main problem with Pants is that normally Paladin was just worse at fighting for the board than other classes after Mini Bot Muster rotated out. So when they kill your stuff, you don't have stuff to buff. But with Galvadon, since you have that quest every game, it's okay to be buffing your stuff from a losing board position. Like, if I've lost board control, I can still just, like, hero power and buff my guy with, like, one mana Divine Shield and, like, one mana Blessing. And then all of a sudden, with those two cards being played, my quest pops, and next turn I play Galvadon, and my opponent's just dead. Like, who cares if I don't have board control for a couple turns? And I think, like, when the payoff is win the game or something similar to win the game, I think this quest is like a lot better than it looks, and they're even adding some actual two drops and one drops to the deck. Like the Hydrologist is such a big deal. That's such a big deal. Like Paladin just never had a two drop. So since Minibot rotated out, so that's a huge deal that we get Hydrologist now. You have Lost in the Jungle. You can just play Knife Juggler anyway as like a two drop if you want, and play that with Lost. It's this deck looks solid to me, you know, even without seeing any more buffs being released yet.
Really?
If there's one more cheap one, I think it's a fine deck.
And so, okay, this is interesting because I had like the opposite reaction to this, which was, I mean, I agree that Galvadon's strong. And let's clear up one thing for, I guess, folks listening about adapting multiple times. The question about can you stack adapts or can you get repeat adapts? And, you know, I guess what is the answer to that? I'm not even sure I know 100%.
Yes, it is. You can,
right? Okay.
You won't be getting offered, do you want three attack, or three attack? But you can be offered three attack on five different like selections of three cards or three adaption.
Okay, so it's possible that an adapt. Is it possible for an adapt?
It can be a 14-5 stealth wind fury.
Okay.
Like, it can be a 14-5 stealth wind fury on its own.
Yeah.
Now, you have to high roll like a motherfucker, but, you know, you can get there.
That's true.
And I feel like people are really undervaluing. I mean, then again, we just got a reveal for another buff for Paladin, but I think people are undervaluing just how good, like, the quest makes the Pants deck, as Renat called it. Mm-hmm. An old magic term I never thought I'd hear again. It's one of those, it's one of those decks that's just, I think it's on the cusp. It's always been like on the cusp, but there's never been a good, like a broken enough reason to play it. And that's always been the problem with Hearthstone decks. You have all these cool things, but it's never broken enough to make it. And if Galvadon is consistently coming out, like, you know, on turn 10, and you can thin your deck with small time recruits, thin your deck so you get more buffs. I don't know what the general consensus is going to be on the way you build the deck, but if you can consistently have stuff on board and slow down the aggression and get the six buff, I think this deck is fine. And the six drop buff that they've added, the Spiker's Steed, is absolutely insane. You know, six mana, you give a minion +2/+6 and taunt, so you stall a lot. And when the minion dies, you summon a 2/6, a Stegodon. I mean, that's like
Sludge
Belcher level insanities. Yeah, it's got taunt as well. So this is like 12, like a 4/12 worth of stats of taunt with taunt, or 2/12. It's completely bonkers, I think, for a defensive tool. Now, is it going to be played? That's another story.
Do
you get hexed? Yes. But the question is, if the Pants deck is alive, you know, this is probably going to be one of those mid-game tools that lets it get there.
Okay, so let's take a look at the buffs, because I actually created a graphic with just some of the buffs, or majority of the buffs that are in Paladin. On top of that, you know, the six spell that you just mentioned. So what are the most likely candidates of running into this kind of, I guess, for lack of a better word, Pants Paladin, you know, into the Galvadon.
I
can't hear you, Ray. You're muted.
Is Blessing of Wisdom in Classic, or what's that?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's in Classic. Mm-hmm. It's an undervalued. That's an
underplayed,
underrated card, I think, in a way. I mean, people
really strong.
Yeah, people have rarely played it, but every time I've tried to do cool things with it, it's been surprisingly versatile and cool. You can, you know, you can do some cool things even to your opponent's minions with it. So which one of these would you play? Like I think Bananas is an interesting option with maybe Mukla. Divine Strength,
surprised you have Holy Light on here and not Blessing of Might.
Of Might wasn't, oh crap, yeah, you're right. Blessing of Might is an obvious one. That's an obvious one, right? Yeah,
is Seal rotating out?
I think it is. I think Sealed is rotating out. That's why I didn't.
Seal of Champions? Oh, maybe it's in TGT. Oh, man, that's a bummer.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't include
no,
that.
No, not like this.
And we need six, right? Six isn't too bad, actually.
Yeah, I mean, the ones you play are all the one mana ones, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
And then the monkey. So
okay.
That's 9 buffs already.
Yeah, God, that's a lot. Wow. Yeah.
Plus blessings. It's actually 11.
Yeah.
So
holy crap. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like over a third of your deck. It's a good amount. And the deck's curve would be low enough that you can definitely build it in a divine favor package. Your early drops that you're buffing are like, oh crap, the egg's rotating out, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Runic egg?
No,
the
dragon.
Playable one.
The dragon egg is rotating out. That's the problem. Like, I don't have any idea for one drops I want to pull out with small time or divine favor right now.
You can do Seeker Keeper because now you have Dark Peddler card.
Okay.
Sure, then you play the quest sometime in the mid game and then start buffing later.
Yeah, this might have to be like I built a pants deck once that was an Arcane Giant shell.
Oh, I like
that idea. It was mostly spells anyway.
Wow.
And they're all really cheap. So I think that might be the way to go. Point is, there's a lot of flexibility and there's a lot of ways to build it. But like the early drops have to be there to support it. So we just need something like, people keep harping on like, are the buffs good enough? Like the buffs aren't the problem. There's plenty of good buffs.
Yeah.
The problem is like, what are you putting these buffs on? You know, there's no Nerubian Egg, which would be, again, perfect. So you're buffing like Lost in the Jungle tokens and Hydrologist.
Mm-hmm.
And Secret Keeper if you're putting a secret package in. So the question really is, will Blizzard put some buffable dudes into Un'Goro that we don't have right now?
Wait, we have the 1-mana 1/2 that when it dies with higher strength draws you a card, right? That's another one drop.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
The Marshall. Yeah. I completely forgot about that guy. Marshall. He was my favorite from Mean Streets.
That's
actually a good fit for one drops.
That's true.
And maybe the new elemental guy, the 1/2 for one. That card's
the anomaly?
Okay. Yeah, you can also just do like pirates.
Pirates, I was going to say that too.
Arcane Anomaly with Argent Squires and the Mean Street Marshal gives you a decent like one drop base.
Yeah, Anomaly was in the Arcane Giant list I had.
That's good.
Yeah, they're okay. You kind of need coin for Anomaly to be good, but yeah, it's it's definitely playable.
Yeah, the two drop again, as you said, the Hydrologist. Like, people, I've heard a lot of people actually complain about the card. Like, oh, this is a bad two drop. Thanks, Blizzard. I'm like, no, this is a two drop. It's a good card. Like, people,
you get an additional card. Period. You know, it's
flexible too. Ish.
It creates a new card. You don't actually have to run a secret, which is a big deal too.
Hydrologist is exceptional. It's like an 8 out of 10 card. Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, I think the what was I gonna say? I was thinking about early game minions.
You're talking about one to the elemental
pirates?
No,
Natpeggle. Natpeggle, I think, is really good in his deck.
Natpeggle? Man, now we're getting somewhere. Yeah. Oh, wow. Because
he has enough health that he usually survives turn two, and then like he doesn't die to Jade Claw or whatever, and then you can, as soon as you buff him up, he snowballs really hard. So
yeah,
what you really need in this deck is like something that lives for one turn.
Right.
And that card provides that.
Man, okay, now you got me a lot more interested. You got me a lot more interested. True Silver, what'd you say? True Silver Champion?
We're missing Seal of Champions for Nat, man. That curve has got to be pretty sick.
Yeah. Okay, you've got me a lot more excited about this then. I love Galvadon, but I was just a bit disappointed when I first heard the quest because I didn't think Galvadon would be as possible. But now that you guys are talking about, you know, just this pants archetype, and just some of the choices that we can put stuff on. That's pretty cool. Just kind of round things off, we got one last minion that was released, I think, yesterday. It's 4-mana, 3/4 beast, Battlecry, adapt your Silverhand Recruits, and it's Light-Fused Stegodon. And I actually thought it was going to be a Silverhand Recruit quest because of this and because of Lost in the Jungle, but you know, they obviously surprised us with this casting spell on your minions. So there's some synergy with Silverhand Recruits too. That's kind of good. I don't know if it's going to fall in line with this, but maybe with the Tarum, you know, the Legendary that was announced before. Maybe you could do something with that. Okay, let's move on to the Hunter cards, which I just added to notes, guys. I didn't realize it wasn't on there until just now, but I'm sure you guys have seen all the Hunter cards. All right, we got a lot of them here. And
They're kind of all the same. Yeah. Like one big thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, Hunter obviously has been one of the worst classes just the last, man, maybe the last year. I mean, definitely the last half year. And the last expansion didn't really help too much with that. But they seem to be adding a bunch of, you know, help, at least in terms of Hunter and what they need. But why don't we start with the quest? Because I think the quest kind of leads into a lot of these other minions here. The quest is the Marsh Queen. It's a place 7 1-cost minions, and reward is Queen Karnassa. And Karnassa is a 5-mana 8/8, just like all the others. Shuffle 15 raptors into your deck, and they're not random raptors, guys. They're specific raptors, which are called Karnassa's Brood. And these are 1-mana 3/2 beasts that have a battle cry of draw a card. So potentially like an engine that just keeps on coming, you know, like you just can keep on drawing these things potentially at the end of a, maybe at the end of a game. Okay. So what are your thoughts on this, Ray?
The quest is probably the strongest one, I would say, is what it makes the impression I get. I mean, the paladin one might be stronger actually, but this one's pretty good.
Okay.
It doesn't just win the game like the paladin one, but it's a really powerful payoff and it's a really easy condition to meet. So, I think we're really going to need like at least one more playable one drop from the new expansion to really make me 100% sold on this, because I think like cards like small raptor specifically, I think is unplayable and just isn't even in contention for this deck, but it's an easy condition to meet. Okay. You don't have to play bad cards. And yeah, I think it's a really powerful quest.
All right. Yeah. Noxious, first thoughts on it.
Yeah, I guess the quest, you know, is kind of, there's so many ways to build it based, because we saw the first card that had to do with this quest be the Tolvir Warden, 5-mana 3/5, mm-hmm. you draw 2/1 cost minions from your deck.
Yeah.
That's one way you can build the deck, or you can accelerate it by just jamming a bunch of 1-cost minions in your deck, right? Like, there's two approaches to it. Either you go all in on the 1-drops and hope the Queen Karnassa carries you, or you just go with the Tolvir Warden slow-paced deck. And I don't know if the 1-drops are there yet. Like, we've got Alley Cat, we've got Fiery Bat that are staying around. Those are good. Then I look at Argent Squire, maybe. And then Small Raptor just seems weird. That card is terrible. 1-mana 2/1. Like, initially when I saw it, I was like, okay, cool. Maybe this is a fit for the early beast stuff that you want to adapt with the Crackling Razor Maw. It's a 2-mana 3/2 that does that as well. Mm-hmm. Adapts a friendly beast. So you can curve 1 into 2, but I mean, a 1-mana 2/1 that does nothing on board is horrible, and it also interrupts the cycle from Queen Karnassa's Brood, because that's what you want to end up doing, is just drawing all of them. I don't know. I really don't know if this quest is as good as Race seems to think it is. I don't know if it's quick enough to get the game closed off.
Well, so I think there are a couple things that, you know, need to be working, you know, for this type of deck to be able to be successful. And one of them is an issue that we've had with Hunter for a long time, or at least it might not have been a major issue given that it's had so much tempo, is card draw. You know, like we run out of cards so really quickly, and if this quest is to play 1-drops, we're going to run out of cards even faster. So that's why it surprised me when you said small raptor is just not a consideration. Just
Firefly
given...
is better than Firefly. It, right?
Okay, like, Firefly. Okay.
For instance, yeah, you're getting 2 1-drops and 1 card.
Okay, all right. That's true. That's a good point. You know, the Torvir Warden helps out too with it. So I'm happy to see cards like that. But does this, I guess with this quest generally, guys, like, does it fix some issues with Hunter right now? Which I would say some of the, you know, issues, just bringing up a few, is the cards are just not as powerful as some of the classes, especially in that 2, 3, and 4, drop range. And, you know, the end game tempo too, it's just not quite as strong as some of the others. Does it fix this, Ray?
I mean, I think so. I mean, I have a question. Hopefully it's not too dumb of a question. No. But like, does Alley Cat count as playing 2 minions for Marsh Queen?
No, it's only 1.
It's 1 because it summons. It's not an actual play.
All right. It's the same thing with patches, right? It doesn't mm-hmm. count.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I mean, Hunter needs a lot of help. I don't know.
That's what I mean. It's like, does this actually help? Or are we just going to be like, oh, these are great, but, you know, Hunter still sucks?
I'm just thinking about every single curve that this deck could have. And what do you do against Jade Claw Maelstrom Portal? Like, it's unbeatable, right? You can't.
Yeah, we
Well, you can go like, because turn one's rotating out, right? So you go turn one quest, and turn two, you go, I don't know, fire, like the little firefly guy into Argent Squire. Sure, you're behind, you know, over two turns, but then you jam 3-1 drops on turn three, and then you have to wait maybe like an extra turn to do it. If you play nothing but one drops, clearly.
Yeah, on the bright side, patches will count for me too, since I'll be playing it from hand. This is not bad. I mean,
I like the optimism. Yeah, oh, good shit.
I think the two drop is really strong. Cracking Razor Maw, like that card's absolutely powerful. And yeah, overall, is this enough to help Hunter? Not if this is all it gets, then no. But you know, I'm sure Hunter has more coming, and there's a lot of cards in the expansion we haven't seen yet. So.
Yeah. Well, they don't have. There's not that many left. There's like four cards left for Hunter.
Given that could change everything. Like you might, we might be getting something insane.
Yeah, neutral.
Like for example, I think you play the elemental guy 100%, the 1/2 for one.
Yeah.
So
1/2 for one. Yeah.
Overall, this is really. I don't know, man. I'm optimistic. Hunter still has the best hero power in the game, basically, like overall, and it's.
Well, it's okay. So it's one of these things. I think with Hunter is that it's not going to get early tempo. So, yeah, the hero power is great, but the hero power, it's always had a lot to do with just having tempo and in a position to you know, finish them at a relatively quick pace. That's been the problem. We got cool cards like Kodo. We got cool cards like Rat Pack and things like that. It's just, it's not fast enough, or at least it wasn't fast enough in the past to be able to keep up with all these top tier decks, you know, in classes. So does this, I don't think any of these things help with it either. I don't think they're gonna, they have like a super powerful 3-drop or a 4-drop that helps them catch up, and then the quest isn't necessarily an immediate finisher. It might be with, you know, like a Tundra Rhino or something like that the following turn, but
they don't need that really, like unless it got 75 board clears at some point. They're just taking, you know, 15 damage a turn. Like it goes by really quick. And the Hunter pure power scales so well that if they're down to 20, you're basically just clocking them right away as they defend against the onslaught of 3/2s.
Like, are you getting them down to 20? Like,
say what?
Are you getting them down to 20 though? With some of the
by 20?
Oh, yeah. By 20.
I think you are. 20. If you're jamming Karnassa on 5 into like cycle. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the time you would be. So. Okay.
We're losing quick shot, right?
Yeah,
losing quick shot. That's a big.
Yeah, those suck. And there's a bit more incidental life gain in the game now, like with the Shaman Legendary for Elementals. It's I don't know. I'm optimistic. I think Hunter will be in a better spot than it was before overall. I think the patches nerf helps Hunter a lot. And I think Hunter wasn't as bad as people think it is. It just, like, if Hunter had Glaive Zuka, it would have been a tier 1 deck. So it's like the difference of one card, you know, really.
We still have four cards. They could still give us a 2-drop. Weapon that
if the class had like Argent Lance, that's all it would take, you know. Yeah. It's not fancy,
seriously.
Yeah. We need a Beast Claws, 2-mana, some of the 1/1 cat,
a cat, yeah, or a raptor or something like that. All right, we've got Mage and Druids at the very end here. These are the last few cards that we have. We've gotten through this pretty quickly, man. This has been good. I put these together just because there weren't too many. We had a new Druid card come out late last night, which, man, good stuff. I'd start with the Mage one. It's a spell, 3-mana, rare mana bind is the name. It's a secret, so a new secret. When your opponent casts a spell, add a copy to your hand that costs 0 mana. Okay, so a lot of the stuff that's been announced with Mage has been secret related, you know, with Arcanologist and... some of the other cards too. I just split in my mind. So is this a secret that you think will be something that's playable in terms of adding to that portfolio of secrets, Ray?
I do. It's some people said it looked kind of bad, but I think it's definitely playable in some world. I think a lot of there's just so much secret synergy at this point that you really have to consider cards like this. It always one for ones. The only thing about it that's a little bit awkward is Cabal Lackey. Like,
yeah,
Cabal Lackey is a card you're going to be playing in your more aggressive secret decks, and Cabal and Mana Bind is also one of the secrets that you want to keep in your opening hand. But let's picture that we get to a metagame where you queue against Jaina, and you know that Jaina is playing the secret tempo deck or whatever. In your deck, probably has a quest in it, or a lot of the decks will. So do you just like never play your quest until you see a secret from them? Is there like this interesting metagaming thing where you like bait the... I'm not describing this very well.
I know what you mean. I know what you're talking about.
Like, you really don't want a mana bind a secret because you'll lose the game, and your opponent will know that. And like, this card alone might make me use stream delay for every stream. Like, because then you can bluff on the first secret, right? The thing with Cabal Lackey is, like, you want to keep your secrets once you have the Lackey, and this is one of the few that you're good to play early. Like, you don't want to play Mirror Entity early because you copy garbage.
Yep.
And Mana Bind, well, it's copying, it's okay, but yeah, Mana Bind's, like, actually a good one because it one for one's always, so. Yeah, and it's
you can get the coin, right?
What's really weird about the card is, like, just, like, it's kind of in the crossfire of Counterspell and Spellbender, right? Where they play around something to give you a garbage spell to open the sequence. They go like, all right, crappy spell, and then to check for Counterspell. And so you get a crappy spell in return. That's my only worry about the card.
Is but countering a crappy spell. Like, if you counter a spell that you don't want to counter, like, your secret is basically worthless. But this gives you their crappy spell. And Mage is a deck that can do a whole lot with crappy spells. That's so true. The fact that you can just play Antonitis on curve and then your mana bind spell is like a really big deal. So I think, like, overall, getting a crappy spell is better than countering a crappy spell.
Yeah,
I think
I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, there, like you said, Antonitis, Mana Worm, and there are definitely some synergistic. It's a zero spell. it's just good a lot of times. It's interesting that you said that playing it early is better. I was thinking that, you know, you'd want to play this later just so you can get some value from it.
Yeah, later's good too. I just mean, like, I've played those secret mage tempo decks, and there's like some secrets that you do want to keep early off your Cabal Lackey, and there's some that you don't. You know, like, if you have Cabal Lackey and your deck has like Ice Barrier or Ice Block or whatever, those aren't really things you want early. Whereas like something like Mana Bind is fine, or, you know, like if you already have like Coin plus Kirin Tor Mage, then you can keep Mana Bind, for example, but you wouldn't keep every secret in that scenario. Not all of them are necessarily good. Mm-hmm. It just depends on what's in your deck, really.
Okay. So you think the secret mage is already there? Like, just good enough with what you've seen? Or do you still need some work?
I mean, the 2-drop is broken.
Yeah, the Arcanologist.
Yeah, the card's beyond busted. That might be the strongest card they revealed in the expansion. But Mana Bind is like... it helps. I think you play it. But they need like a really strong secret, like duplicate level strong.
Yeah, I feel like that's the missing one. Yeah, just some kind of value based or card value based one.
Effigy
is so terrible right now. Gosh, people still trying to play that every once in a while. Okay, so Druid spells and new cards here. We've got 5-mana living mana. It's an epic card. Transform your mana crystals into 2/2 minions. Recover the mana when they die. So, very new concept, or maybe not completely new, because we saw a little bit of it with the Darnassus Aspirant. But, you know, in the form of a spell and just the extent of it, this is very cool. You know, it's a different type of druid, too. It's not Jade. So, what are your initial thoughts on that, Ray?
My initial thoughts are just a bunch of rules questions. How does it work? Like, if I double innervate it, what happens? I get a 2/2 on turn one?
If you double innervate it on turn one, you'd get a single 2/2, I believe.
And then my crystal
is gone.
Just
so you'd get one again.
So what happens next turn?
You'd get a
crystal next turn, or do I get a dude next turn?
Oh, the next turn you get a crystal. Like, you just. Okay, wait, so you have a 2/2 on the board. I should have showed the 2/2, I think. Let me see if I can snag that real quick. The 2/2 is a tree ant that has death rattle add a crystal to back to your your mana.
I understand.
Yeah, so you still get crystals like you normally do. It's just
since it says transform your mana crystals.
Yeah.
Does that mean they're unaffected by summoning sickness? Because there's no way they have charge. You would just 14 your opponent every game.
Yeah, they don't have charge. That's for sure. That would be horrible. That'd be horribly broken.
I mean, the mana crystal is already in play for a turn, so only one of them should be summoning sick. But
Okay.
Like in Magic, there's effects like this. This card is literally a ripoff of Rude Awakening. Rude Awakening let you attack right away with the dudes.
Oh, I see.
Because the lands were already in play, and you're transforming them. But okay. Yeah, this is interesting. Okay, I understand.
Yeah. I don't think it's something you'd be playing in the beginning of a game. It's more like a little bit later. So one thing I did find out, since we're talking about rules, is that unlike Forbidden, some of the Forbidden card or Forbidden Healing in particular, it does protect you against, you know, spending all your crystals for nothing, you know, type of thing. Where, so if you only have like two slots open, it'll only spend like twice. You know what I mean? Like if you actually play living mana, it only does it twice.
You know that for sure, because it doesn't say like it doesn't.
Yeah,
stop.
Somebody in my, you know, my Discord, was told me that last night. So,
okay, great. That's nice to know.
They linked something too. So I think it was from one of the Blizzard folks. Yeah. So I kind of disappointed that I actually wanted there to be, you know, possible like error prone situations just for fun
Devolve
videos.
Devolve is enough
like
to nullify Galvadon in this, dude. If Devolve is played because Galvadon is good, this is just dead in the water. Like, this is never a thing you risk. If you know what I mean, like, there's so many ways in which this goes wrong.
I mean, you could
Master Spell Galvadon in Priest, right? And be like, oh, I'm happy here.
But you have to play Master Spell. Like, the Priest actually has to play Master Spell. Yeah, sure. It might be. I know, if Galvadon's too strong, then maybe it does. Yeah, and it's possible.
It depends what it comes down to, anyway.
Yeah. Ray, you're going to say
something? I think the biggest thing that counters living mana is Jade Idol. Is you would just, right? You'd just rather play a good deck. I mean,
it's a self-defeated
card. Come on, man. Really?
This is a bad five-cost card. I could play 17-17s instead.
So,
I mean, you could play this in the Jade Druid deck, I guess. It's like plan B. That's interesting. That's a cool deck.
Okay, so I'm much more bullish about this and just the Druid flooding archetype. I mean, I've always been a fan of the flooding archetype. So, you know, things like Egg Druid, you know, Jackie's Egg Druid and Token Druid in the past and things like that. Just the ability to fill a board. And in the past, we only had Savage Roar. You know, now we have even Evolving Spores, which is this other card that we have here. It's a 4-mana adapt your minions. You're just having multiple minions on the board. Yeah, you're going to take a hit with the mana crystals and you might actually never get those crystals back given the possibilities. But as long as it's not like you're playing seven of them, you know, and you're down to three, it's not too bad. I mean, if you can get three, let's say you have 10 mana and you get 3 2/2s on the board. And then your options after that are Soul of the Forest. You know, like, let's just say you have seven things on the board after you plus living mana. Then all of a sudden you have Soul of the Forest. And then the following turn, you have options for Savage Roar or two Evolving Spores or any of those kind of combinations. I know it's pie in the sky type of stuff, but...
No, it's not pie in the sky.
It's not pie in the sky at all.
It's definitely exciting. I think it would have been really cool if Blizzard made a 5-mana Druid card that gave you 3 2/2s before this so we could see whether it would be good enough for Constructed or not. But I don't know. It's or maybe like a neutral one that you could like buff with hand effects. That
yeah, I've never seen that card before. Like, if you could run 4 copies of it, then it's more consistent. So suddenly you can consistently get it done.
Sure. I mean, okay. All right. If it's 3, okay, I get y'all's point. But if you have potential to do more though here, you know, even if you just want to run Savage Roar, you could actually just go all in and say, I'm just gonna put 7 2/2s on the board, hope I can Savage Roar enough of them to kill you.
You know, I'm like, down with that. I mean, because it's more than 3 2/2s. So, like, I'm okay with the idea of I put this as a one of in my deck that contains Savage Roar for my late game. I'm completely out of options. Jam this. Mm-hmm. But again, you have to be not playing Jade Druid, which, that's the question.
I think if I played this card, it is an interesting card. It would be like more like aggro Druid deck.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure. Yeah.
Like Token Oriented one, right? And then they kill your stuff, but they only have like one dude in play, and you just all in with 6 2/2s. Yeah, that could be interesting, right? It enables your Savage Roars and everything. It's cheesy. It could be good. I don't know. It's a cool card, and I'm glad that they made something that's like interesting, and I hope that they port more unique magic effects into the game. This card is like weird enough that it's not the kind of thing I would have expected Blizzard to ever make.
Yeah.
I'm excited to experiment with it.
I think that was one of the few first cards we saw, and I'm just like, that was the point where, not one of the first few, but it came afterwards, and that's the point where I went from, oh, this expansion is going to be just another, you know, snorefest of Curvestone, to, holy crap, look at that mechanic. Maybe they're experimenting with stuff, and then we've been getting some interesting stuff since. in terms of card design. And I'm just hoping the rest of the expansion is just as creative, because at the very least, this is something that makes me want to build a deck and find where to put it. You know, at the very least, it does that, which isn't the case with every card. So
I think both of these cards, it makes me want to try something that's not Jade Druid, which is mission accomplished, at least to some degree. Now it's a matter of whether it's viable or not. And I think Evolving Spores, I don't know, it's one of those things where I feel like the fact that you can get Wind Fury just from an adapt just gives finishing
permanent Bloodlust.
There's a lot of different ways. And the fact you can run two of these too, it's potential for some interesting situations with Beast Druid or just maybe even Jade. I don't even know. But the fact that you can possibly get Wind Fury is like an enhancement. You know, remember back in the day, the zoo enhancement mechanic? I know Ray remembers that day. Like, you can have those kind of just finishes, you know, out of nowhere and just playing whatever deck, you know, and that's kind of what this card allows you to do. Adapting multiple minions, like that one that does multiple Murlocs into, I feel like it's potentially broken, like these type of cards when you're talking about adapt. So I'm interested to see if this is one of those cards. I feel like there's a chance that this card could be crazy good for a Druid. Just we're not, you know, it's not completely clear as to what it is, but it has potential to be crazy good. So I think the Druid is, I think we're coming on like another era of Druid is what I'm thinking is about to happen, but we'll have to see how the finishers for all the other classes
are. I mean, I'm
down
to adapt my Jades, you know, I'll take +3 health on a 7/7. You know, like you can basically, that's the insane part is you can actually give Divine Shield to a wide board, Wind Fury, +3 attack. Like there's like 60% of the buffs are fine. Like give them stealth to another turn, it's effectively Wind Fury in some respects. It's like you're concealing the board. I mean, that's like a lot of the effects are just good.
Yeah. Conceal's good. I mean, I think when you're at the Jade part where your Jade golems are huge, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that's
it doesn't
an exaggeration,
matter,
but
right? Yeah. Yeah. But maybe if you could adapt, I don't know, a 5/4, maybe you're playing Warden, you know, like a Beast Druid, you just have two minions and all of a sudden you do 20 damage. It's like, it's over. It's like literally over on, I don't know what turn that is, turn 8 or something like that. It's possible that it could be that good. Where we only saw that with Savage Roar. This is more flexible that way. Okay, well, any last comments, you guys, on Druid or these cards? Ray?
No? I mean, I'm good. I mean, I think Evolving Spores is like, just got to compare it to Soul of the Forest.
Really? Okay.
It's probably a little bit better. Just because you might be able to kill him that turn.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. Cool cards.
Yeah, definitely. I think overall, I've been just happy with you know, what we've been seeing coming out. I don't know if it's going to initially change power levels as much, but it potentially could, which is, I think, enough for me to have been very pleased and just seeing some of the things that they're trying. You know, it's very clear that they're trying stuff now, and I think that's good. Noxious, how about you? Just generally with the largest, you know, like I know we've been all kind of like, oh, man, I wish they would do this, or I wish they would do that, and one of the reasons why Mech Turk's always fun here.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm really happy with the design of the cars in general, but I want to see what the entire expansion looks like before we make an evaluation, because it might turn out that, you know, things are just not where we think they're going at all. That's always the case, it seems, with expansions. One of the things I'm noticing about Hearthstone, though, it's going, like, I feel like the game has a lot of those, like, stuff like, you know, the adapt mechanic giving Wind Fury to random stuff. Like, that is double strike level game ending. And there's a lot more of that type of gameplay coming in where the guy gets a 4-drop and he plays something, the 4-drop gets big and it single-handedly kills him. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not to say that that didn't happen before, because 4-mana 7/7s were a thing, but I feel like we're getting into the bursty, like, the accepted, those plays are accepted, bursty onboard cards that just you can't handle and just kills you over two turns on its own or one turn.
Yeah.
And I don't mind that necessarily. I think I like it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm happy that adapt has stealth as an option yet. But
yeah,
Stealth.
We'll see.
I think stealth and Wind Fury are the two that I question the most with adapt. Just cause,
like, they didn't put charge on any of them, right?
Thank God.
Like, no,
like they see the problem in charge, right?
Yeah,
stealth is the same level. Like, I don't know. That's like slightly less bad, but it's still pretty bad. So I don't know. We'll see. Oh, I don't know. I'm
optimistic about the Paladin thing. And honestly, I can't really, with the amount of cards spoiled so far, it's hard to say what decks exactly will be good. That'll take some time to figure out.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's just round things up. Maybe just take one question here. We've got a few, but given that you just said that, maybe not the first one. Well, I wanted to ask the first one. I was just asking it anyways. Stuart P. asks, what... I see. Now that we're a week or less from the big release, let's see. What deck archetypes are you guys going to be are excited about, and which ones are you going to basically try first? What do you guys think?
Rogue. I'm going to go rogue right off the bat, probably. That's where my inclination is, and then probably try to Paladin Quest. Like, those two, to me, seem the most complex to build. But I'd also want to try out like some slower Warlock discard deck. Not a zoo, but just on the slower end, trying to make some kind of mid-rangey type deck. We'll see.
Ray?
Yeah. Those classes definitely look fun. I want to try to get rank one again in the first couple days. So I want to...
So you're not playing Rogue then?
I mean, yeah, I'll probably just play like Zoo or Thrall or... I don't want to play Jade Druid. I want to stream something fun. I think the expansion is actually coming out a couple days before I can stream it. So I'll be flying back into the country. That's going to kind of suck, but...
Bummer.
Yeah, I'll play it, you know, as soon as I'm back on that Saturday. And yeah, I guess I'll probably gravitate towards what people have streamed the least of.
So hipster, man.
That's pretty cool, though, trying to come up with decks instead of just jamming. People will be so cautious, too. I'm sure streamers will be different a little bit in that they try to some new stuff, but the latter will still be infested with Pirate Warrior. Like, expected, guys. Like, if you're thinking this is going to be a fun expansion release, it will be on your end for deck building purposes, but you might just have your face jammed in. So get your Tar Creepers out and get your Taunt Warriors out. Just get ready, because it's going to happen.
I think Pirate Warrior is going to be shut down quick with a lot of these taunts. Okay. Yeah, I think it will.
Imagine Jade Druid, 28 cards identical with two Tar Creepers.
Oh, come on. Fuck. Yeah, that's actually true, though. It's completely true. That's still going to be tier one right there. That's going to be crazy. I think for me, Rogue and... definitely not Priest, which is a bummer for me, because I think the whole Priest thing is the most boring thing in this whole set. I think it's going to be Rogue. It might be Rogue, and I don't know. You guys got me intrigued with the Paladin thing now, so I might be trying the Paladin just because I just need to convince myself this is right. So, but it should be a lot of fun. I'm definitely excited. It's going to happen in a week now. You know, we're going to have just an accelerated release. There's still 71 cards to be released in the next 4 or 5 days. This is going to be crazy, crazy time, but I can't wait. And obviously next week we'll talk about the rest of those, or at least some of the highlights from the rest of those. Why don't we go into some shout outs? Ray, man, fantastic to have you on. And it's been too long. I know you're so busy with having to run an esports team, man, but yeah, it's awesome having you on, buddy.
No, it's good to be on. Yeah. I don't know. Shout out to you guys for having a great show every week. Shout out to TempestStorm.com as always for your wonderful Hearthstone strategy and portable clothing. And yeah, I'm excited to play with the set. Can't wait to do it.
All right. You know, we didn't get a chance to ask you earlier. Any cool news or upcoming news coming for TempestStorm in the next month or two?
Pretty much always, but it's either publicly announced or there's like a reason why it hasn't been publicly announced yet. So it's like, yeah, it's tough for me to, there's a lot of big stuff on the horizon that, I mean, every morning I'm having really key calls. I'm about to get on one in 5 minutes.
Okay, cool. Yeah, let's wrap up then for you. Noxious?
Yeah, shout out to Complexity as usual. Super JJ just playing Gwent all day. Seems cool, man. I've been playing quite a bit of it myself. It's kind of kind of a refreshing change at times. So.
Yeah, nice. I haven't got a chance to try it out. Everybody's been talking about it, obviously. But I just want to thank you guys. I guess I'll round things out. Thank you guys for doing the show with me today. It's been awesome. All the folks for watching, hope you guys enjoyed just our card talk as always. And if you missed any of it, you can check it out on youtube.com/championv. The VODs be there earlier. We've got all the previous shows there too, if you missed them. iTunes, if you're an podcast listener, audio podcast, you can find it there. Just search for Value Town or search for Hearthstone. You'll find us. And same with Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, any of those options too. We're there. But also follow the show's Twitter account at ValueTownGG. And that's going to be it, guys. So for Raynad, Noxious, and myself, ChamMV, we'll see you next week. Woman who was flat and flirtatious, prestigious status, the baddest bitch in the mansion, no matter she was the